effort in the prayers, because that the Arab culture brought that. The Arab culture helped make the Jews poets as well. So the Jews directed it towards holy and sublime goals. But the idea to use words that way, to be inventive that way, the Arabs love, for instance, it's a little like the Japanese also have that. And everybody writes a two-line poem, a couplet. You put your name in it, you hide your name in it, let the guy figure out where your name is. Acrostics, word games. They spell it backwards, spell it forwards. All of those tricks with words are part of the Arabic culture, and they became part of the Hebrew culture, part of the Jewish culture. There is one piyut, for instance, I'm going to try and make copies, not for those who get it by mail, but for those who attend. There is a piyut that the first 1,000 words begin with an aleph. Every word begins with an aleph. Now, can you imagine what that is? To sit and do that, but so in our culture, we would pack them up and send them home, right? Immediately after, you know, if he did it, if the first 100 words began, it would be more than enough. But in that culture, that was a trick. And this will help us understand, for instance, when we discuss the golden age of the Jews in Spain, why Rabbi Alevi, for instance, the wedding present to a Chosen Kala was that he came and wrote a song, a poem for them. Not only for a Chosen Kala, for funerals they would compose poems, elegies, that they would read the Hespen in rhyme with perfect meter. Because that's part of the Arabic culture. And to later generations of Jews, it would even appear foreign. But the truth of the matter is that that influence remains with us today. It's in our prayers, and it's part of us. But that really is a direct influence of Arabic culture upon us. Philosophy. The Arabs became very big. The Muslims became very big in philosophy. They inherited Aristotle, because the church, who needed Aristotle and would use it with Aquinas later in the 9th century, but the church was asleep for these hundreds of years. And the Arabs got a hold of the Greek books, all the classical books, and they read them. And again, because of their love of words, they developed ideas in philosophy, and they wrote about it. And they would become, as we would see, great experts in philosophy. So that when they came to debate the Jews, after the first century of Arab rule, they debated the Jews. They did not come with the sword. They came with intellect and their mouth to debate the Jews. When it came to debate the Jews, then the Jews had to answer. And the Jews had to answer in kind. And now we will find for the first time in the Tkufas HaGaonim, in the period of the Gaonim, which is the 8th century, the 7th century, the 9th century, we'll find Jewish philosophers for the first time, and full-blown Jewish philosophers, Rabbeinu Sadia Gaon being the chief among them. And the books were written in Arabic. The Jews learned Arabic. And in fact, in that part of the world, Arabic began to take the place of Aramaic. Then, beginning in the 7th century in Bavel, with the coming of the Muslims, the Aramaic language among the Jews began to decline. The Jews no longer spoke Aramaic as the vernacular between themselves. They began to speak Arabic. And they began to write in Arabic. And the Arabic language was held to be such a, because it's a sister language to Hebrew, it's a Semitic language, but it was held to be a language that had such potential that we'll see that the Rambam wrote his famous Pirush HaMishnayos, his commentary to the Mishnah, he wrote it in Arabic. And here you're writing an explanation to the Mishnah, a halachic book, and you're writing it in Arabic. That could not be done if the culture would not have supported it. He says that he wrote it in that language because he wanted everybody to be able to read it. So obviously,